Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. No Mark Heath this week, so I am Andy Warren and I'm hosting, and I'm joined by a man who is tucked away in his little Cornish retreat, and that man is Stuart Watson. Hello, Stuart Watson.
Hello, Andrew Warren. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Are you by the sea? Are you inland?
About a mile up the road, so yeah, pretty coastal. We've had a couple of little beach walks of an evening. It's been nice.
So just to set the scene, Stu is working this week, but at the in-laws in Cornwall, which must be quite nice, a change of scene. We don't need to be in an office. We don't need to be at football grounds. So we are flexible, Stu. At Archant, this is called agile working. Are you feeling agile?
Very agile, yeah. The freedom of working from home is very nice. Laptop, phone, jobs are good.
Fax machine on the back seat. Everyone's happy. Have you had any pasties in Cornwall yet?
Just the one so far. I've been very restrained.
I don't know if I'd be able to stick to just one. What else is going on in the Cornish food world? Are there any other kind of delicacies that we need to know about?
Your clotted cream.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Your ice creams.
They do a good ice cream in the Cornwall, don't they?
Yes. But no, the clotted cream's the big one, mate. Make sure you put that on the top.
Is that the official way?
Yeah, I better get this right, but they get very, very angry about that. It's the whole Devon-Cornwall split. I'm pretty sure, and people will correct me if I'm wrong, that the Cornish way is jam on the bottom, cream on the top.
And if you go over the border in Devon, they do it the other way, just to mix it up.
Yeah.
To mix it up.
And get very angry about it on both sides of the border.
Good. Well, at least you know what you're doing and can't get yourself into any trouble. It's actually been a relatively busy Ipswich Town week, hasn't it, Stu? Given we still have no football, we are now, is this 4 months now of no football? And there's probably at least another two to come of no football, but a fair amount has gone on, including season ticket refunds, which we've been talking about on this podcast forever. But it's finally happened. But first, we're going to hit up the most exciting news, which is the new away kit, which we were told it's going to be something a bit different, something the club have never worn before, and that goes for both the colour and the material, Stu.
Yeah, straight off the bat, I'm going to say I like it. We were told it was Marmite, that it would split opinion. The various polls that we've been putting out have backed that up. Let me have a little look. The one I put on Twitter's got the most votes. So that's had 1,400 votes so far. 29% love it. 28% like it. 24% say, meh, it's all right. And 19% say, not for me, which is a kind of way of saying, I hate it.
Wow.
So, split right down the middle there. And I like the fact that it splits people because, do you know what? They change kit every year. You may as well be bold and try and do something different each year. I just felt last year was a bit lacked imagination. It was a bit like, oh, a couple of years ago, this one was really popular, so we'll pretty much replicate that. Do something different. Try and make people want to buy an away shirt. and they've certainly done something different. Mm. Do you like it?
I do like it. Yeah, very much. And I think your first instinct is generally the right one. If you see something and you like it straight away. Although I have to say the kit that Ipswich were relegated in grew on me significantly throughout the season. But this one I really like. I don't know what colour I'm calling it though. I really like the kind of neon-y blue of the Adidas logo and sponsor and stuff. But is it grey? Is it blue?
Well, they're officially calling it pale blue, but until we've seen it in person, it's hard to say, but I think the pictures look a little bit more like a light grey than a pale blue. I've seen people say it's a bit like when a rogue dark sock gets caught in the whitewash, and that's a bit like your white primary school t-shirts that got a bit worn, and they would turn that colour after a while. But I like it. I like it. Like you say, the blue detailing, are they calling that a sharp blue? I think that's nice. The fact that that's consistent across the various stripes and badges and sponsors, and the numbers on the back as well, which are going to be a little bit different. Bespoke numbers and names, font of the names on the back. I don't know if you've seen that, but
I've seen that. Yeah, I have some points to make on the name and numbers on the back. Ipswich have got a bespoke colour, haven't they, for this? But the new EFL number design, I hate it. I think they're awful, if I'm honest.
All of the numbers are going to look like.
Yeah, okay. This is across the whole EFL. I think Ipswich have got their own bespoke colour, which is good because it will match the blue that's on the rest of the kit. But the actual design of the numbers, I hate. They're all separated out. There's gaps between, I think there are three sections to each of the numbers. It's not good.
It has to me, it looks like on the back of this shirt as well, it kind of makes it look more camouflagey and army-like. And the font of it is quite a harsh, aggressive sort of font with the numbers and the names, isn't it? But
yeah. That's beyond Ipswich's control, isn't it? That's not their doing. That's the EFL. But in general, I really like it, and I don't think you can dislike the fact that it's made what we are going to come to know of Parley Ocean Plastic, which is made from recycled waste that's kind of taken from beaches and river mouths and things like that before it reaches the sea and recycled and sent off to Adidas. So I've got images of people on the beach with their litter pickers picking up crisp packets and popping them in envelopes and sending them off to Adidas to melt down and make into these new shirts. But to have a shirt that's doing something for the environment and helping sustainability there, you can only be happy with that, can't you? Nothing to grumble about there.
Absolutely. As a coastal county, it's nice that Ipswich have got involved in that. I did see one comment, which was, it's kind of ironic that they're talking about sustainable football shirts when clubs change both their kits home and away every year. Perhaps the more sustainable thing would be to use them a little bit longer, but we know money talks when it comes to football shirts. But no, it can only be, that can only be applauded. Of course it can. And it's nice that Ipswich have got involved in it.
Yeah. And let's be honest, people aren't going to, just because they're being used for 1 year, people aren't going to suddenly chuck them away or anything, are they? They will. We've seen throughout this period, a lot of people on social media seem to have been getting quite a lot of fun out of their old football shirts, wearing them again and using them and things like that. So I don't know.
Absolutely. And there's donation schemes, isn't there, for people
to
send them over to Africa and to places like that. So they, football shirts have a long lifespan one way or another. I've been thinking out some of mine from the loft during this strange time. I know you've been doing the same. So they're nice things to have, aren't they?
I'm scared to take them out of the loft because if they come out of the loft, that means the discussion about whether they get removed from my possession entirely begins in my wife's mind. So they're probably safer in the loft for me. But I've been going through them. Can we talk about the new goalkeeper kit as well, please? It's black. It's got the neon blue on it. and it's got the kind of camo design under the arms and down the rib pattern area and around the collar. This is probably my favourite one of all of the kits that have been released over the last couple of weeks, actually. I'm loving this.
Yeah. There's a third keeper choice as well, which is going to be coral, all coral, which they've not released pictures of yet, but apparently that's available to buy, which I imagine for football shirt hipsters like yourself, you'll go out and get the third choice goalkeeper kit, I imagine. That's the sort of thing that you'll do. But
it's not impossible, Stu.
A lot of people are saying they want that black keeper kit in short sleeves and to have that almost as an option to wear. But plain black, it normally goes down quite well, doesn't it?
Yeah. If you're going to have that in short sleeves, Ipswich are going to need to sign a Spanish or Italian or an Italian goalkeeper to pull that off, and then they'll have to have it adapted full time because they love a short sleeve. Third choice goalkeeper kits. You joke, but I actually got one of those out of my massive kit box yesterday. The mint green one that was very rarely worn during the relegation season. Do you remember that one?
Yes,
we saw that a couple of times. I've got one of those in my possession.
Very nice, very nice.
Which I did. So I'm looking forward to seeing these in person because they do look quite different. You find that if you look at them in real life with actual people wearing them rather than cartoon mock-ups, they might even look better.
This design on the front that they're saying it started life as a hand printed design. So somebody, it looks almost like sort of erratic brush strokes, doesn't it? The thing it reminds me of is, do you remember tie-dye? Tie-dye was a big like in the 90s where you could kind of make your own, you get an old t-shirt and you kind of, do you remember you kind of scrunched it up and you could put, I remember my sister doing this, kind of putting elastic bands around bits of the material and dipping it into colours. That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, it reminds me of my poor ability at painting walls where I've put too much paint on certain bits of the wall and it takes significantly longer for those areas of the wall to dry than others.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looks like to me. But no, I'm a big fan. Are there any worries that this might not be worn against teams that kind of wear blue and white at home, thinking Bristol Rovers potentially? Do you think we might still see a reuse of last year's Barcelona kit as a third option?
I don't know. It seems to come down to sort of referee's choice on the day. I think some are more tolerant than others for change of kit, but there is that danger. You'd like to think that they would do their research and somebody would be able to send an email off and say, how many teams would this clash with?
Mm.
Yeah, there is a danger of a lot of sort of predominantly white and quite a lot of blue. That might be the problem, and that's never great, is it, when you sell an away kit that we had it a few years ago, didn't we, that it basically only got worn a handful of times.
Yeah.
It's not ideal.
Yeah. I've seen this week, actually, some Peterborough have launched their new kit this week, which they've switched to Puma, and I think some of their supporters are complaining that it looks too much like an Ipswich kit, in that it's blue body with white sleeves. Quite a simple design, but quite nice. I think there's some distress at the London Road end of things about that being a little too Ipswichy. But I like it.
There's only so much you can do with a colour palette of blue and white, isn't there, really? Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah. You're either having sleeves or you're not. And that is about it. But excellent. Are you gonna invest in any of these?
I'm gonna see if we can blag some off of the club to wear in various videos and things. They were kind enough to give us some last year when we did the kit launch video, the game at Portman Road. I don't know, but even if I'm taking my sort of, if I kind of put myself in my proper fan's shoes, I'd stopped buying kits. Probably in my early 20s, I was certainly someone who went out and bought kits home and away every year, sort of through latter teenage years. As soon as I got a bit of money in my pocket from part-time jobs, that was That was the first thing that I'd go out and buy was football kits, but probably less so in latter years. But hopefully people will buy. I mean, you'll probably find a lot more people have the kit this year, because if people have taken this voucher option with the season ticket refunds, then that might enable people to go out and buy both shirts. So we'll see.
What a beautiful transition into our next topic, Stu, which is season ticket refunds. Like I said earlier, it does sound like we've been talking about these for weeks and months. It's taken Ipswich some time to get these out there compared to other clubs. So I was looking back through what other clubs had done, and Accrington had all of their refund news out. I think it was late March had all of that out there. There are some circumstances why it's not been quite so easy for Ipswich to get done. But they've got there, Stu. They've got there. Should we quickly just run through the refund options before we get talking about them? They're slightly different for whether you were a season ticket holder who's renewed, a season ticket holder who hasn't renewed, or if you're a season ticket holder who's renewed but paid all of your money up front. But in a nutshell, there's option A, which is to donate the money to the club, at which point you would then get some cash vouchers back to use at the stadium. The money would go to the academy or the community trust, and then you would be getting 50% of your donation back in cash vouchers, which, as you've just said, could be used on things at the stadium. You can get a pro rata credit to use towards match tickets, memberships and events next season. Cash vouchers to use in the shop, which, as you've just said, could be used to buy kits. They're giving you a 25% top up on that. You can have a refund paid in equal direct debit installments, which has had some contention. We'll get to that in a minute. And then you can also do a bit of a hybrid option, which splits your donation between a charitable donation to the trust, and then you get some back, and then some vouchers as well. So how did this all go down? I always feel a bit awkward talking about these and whether they're the right options or not, because we're not season ticket holders. We're not paying in our jobs. We're not paying for tickets. We're not the people that are shelling out their money to go to the club. But it does. There have been some contentions with these, haven't there?
I think the main one is the length of time it will take to get the refund. It's split out. You either get it back in three instalments: start of September, start of January, and the start of May. So they're spreading that out. That's obviously a cash, protecting them from a cash flow point of view. They don't want 12,000 people all suddenly wanting their money back overnight. They say that would cost them around £800,000, which would be a hefty whack at a time when income is virtually null for the club. So I can kind of get themselves trying to put a bit of protection in place for that. People are saying, well, if you were due a refund from any other company, you'd get it back straight away. I think during this coronavirus crisis, I've had different experiences with different companies, whether it be theatre tickets, whether it be holidays that I've booked. Some money I've got back straight away. Some money they've said, yeah, you'll get back months down the line. Some have kind of tried to push you down the credit route for different things. So the difference with football is it's a loss-making business, isn't it? So I guess they've got to protect themselves from a cash flow issue more than others. The bigger question would be, could they have done more to find a solution to that cash flow? If you're asking fans to effectively defer their payments back, then should they have been doing the same with the players and the staff? I know Lambert spoke very early on in this process about him and his staff would be willing to take a deferral, although that's kind of gone quiet since. We're told that the players were very much open to wage deferrals and doing anything they could to help the club, but that all kind of got put on hold because of the salary cap talk, and the PFA have kind of advised them all to sit tight for the time being. So I don't think it's people saying, well, if you'd have got the players to defer 20% of wages for a few weeks, then that would have negated the liabilities of refunds. But I was trying to do some quick maths on a sort of £6 million annual wage bill, works out at 100 and something grand a month, which then works out at, you know, if you start working 20% of that, it's 20 grand roughly a week that you could save through those sort of deferrals. So that's going to take you a number of weeks to kind of offset the refund. So I'm sure people behind the scenes have done the maths and have been working things out, you know. But I don't know. Like you say, it's not our money. We're not the season ticket holders, and people have lost jobs. People have had pay cuts. People may very well need that money desperately now. So there's something slightly unethical feel about sort of holding on to that money.
I read the pieces that I've been off most of this week, but I read the pieces that you've been writing around this, and there seems to be a suggestion there that if people are genuinely in financial hardship, it's something that the club would consider kind of maybe speeding up those payments should they be contacted, that kind of thing.
Yeah, which it's a difficult one, because if you are in that position, should you be? It can be hard to kind of reach out for help, isn't it? It's an embarrassing situation, almost have to ring up the club and say, please, can I have it back now? You know, should people? Yes, the club are saying to me that they would listen with great sympathy. We're not ogres, you know, we would sort something out. But should you be putting people in a position where they have to come virtually begging to get their own money back? I'm not so sure.
No. To me, obviously, it isn't my money. And I think everybody is entitled to do whatever they feel is right for this. I've not particularly enjoyed some of the things on social media that have been going around the Ipswich Town Twitter world over the last few days surrounding all of this. But in general, I would say that the options are pretty fair. That there are lots of choice there, albeit with a few issues that we've discussed. But in terms of it taking this long, we've got to the middle of July for this to come out. Do you think people would maybe have looked on what's been offered from the club a little bit more favourably had it been sorted quicker, a little more timely?
Yes, I think that's another gripe, is that it's taken this long. They say that it's because of this changeover to SeatGeek, and SeatGeek couldn't get hold of the database of people until their contract started at the beginning of July. Could they have sort of outlined these options to people earlier and say it won't go live? That the club will argue that once you announce something, people want to act on it straight away, and that the fear would have been like, these are going to be your options in 3 weeks' time. And then people forget about it. And then if they didn't take their option, there'd be a cut-off point where the club automatically say, well, if we haven't heard from you, we're going to take the money as a donation. And then that could have caused issues. I kind of get all of that, but they could have probably been done with a bit more communication earlier in the process. They found a way to, when they needed to renew people's season tickets for next year because they needed that cash to come in, they found a way to technologically to sell them. So I don't know, it's a difficult one. We're not technological experts. I don't quite know how that's all worked behind the scenes, but it felt like it dragged on a little bit too long for me.
Yeah, and another little gripe seems to be, and this is maybe a smaller gripe that will affect some people more than it will affect others, in terms of these cash vouchers to use either around the stadium or in the club shop, they have to be used in person, don't they? They're not, you can't sort of go online and order the new kit in this pre-order phase. You have to buy it in person from the club shop.
Yeah, their argument there is that there is different platforms, software providers, whatever, for different arms of the club. So the money goes into the catering arm if you spend it inside the stadium, or if you Planet Blue is a different arm to the ticketing arm. So there's not a way of giving out a voucher code or something online that you can use across all the different platforms, and they wanted to give people the maximum choice of how to spend that money. I don't know. People saying, oh, I can't get to the stadium in person. By very nature, you were due to go to that stadium five more times with that refund. So I don't know. I feel like they've shot themselves in the foot a little bit, because I think a lot of people would have... I've seen a lot of people going, well, I'd have raced out and bought both kits with that if I could have done it online. But I can't be bothered to drive however many miles to and from the stadium just to do that. I don't know, could they have just split it up and said one option is that you can have it to spend on tickets, one option is just to spend on the club shop, and then people could have done that instead. I don't know. We're picking at this a little bit, aren't we? Where, you know, that, like you say, I think my overall thing is five options. They've tried to give different options for different people. You're not going to please everybody. They may well bring this refund thing forward as well, by all accounts, if they can get people back in the stadium soon. If not everybody takes the refund option, then they, by all accounts, they might move the refund policy forwards a little bit and kind of get everyone's money back this side of the turn of the year. So we'll see.
Can you imagine how many pies you could buy from the club concourse using your refund voucher? Just saddle up there the next game that you're there. 30. I'll have 30 pies, please.
Is that what you're advocating? Get the cash voucher and then just do a pie challenge on the first game. Okay.
Yeah, I think they'd have to up their catering a little if every season ticket holder's invested in pies or overpriced chocolate.
How much is a Portman pie?
I haven't bought one for quite some time. Fiver? I hope not.
Oh, course money, my friend.
I know
we get a bit of a feed where we go, but if you, the odd occasion we've had to go into the concourse, it's not cheap.
I know if you're reaching a fiver, though, there's trouble. I hope they're no more than £3.50, so maybe somebody can let us know. This shows how out of touch we are, Stu. This isn't good, is it? £3.50, if you're getting a 90 quid rebate, you could probably get 25 pies out of that.
Yeah.
And that's probably how I'd do it, to be honest.
Could you eat 25 pies?
How long have I got?
Half time.
In half time? In 15 minutes? No. No, I could not.
All right, I'll give you the whole game. You get them, so you have to get them pre-kickoff, and then you've got the 90 minutes and half time to get them done.
Can I, if I could start kind of at 2:30 when I got to my seat, that would give me from 2:30 till about 5:00, 2.5 hours, 25 pies, 10 pies an hour. I shouldn't be eating 10 pies an hour. That's too many. No, I don't think I could do it. They are quite nice pies, though. But no, I can't eat 25 pies in 2.5 hours. Sorry. You?
I'd give it a go. I don't think I'd be in a great state afterwards. But yeah, this could be the kind of the option. If you're feeling a bit unhappy about the options, this could be your... You know, you don't want to wait for the money to come back. This could be the option that you go for. That sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Your kickback option.
So you don't want to wait till next May for the last of your instalment payments to come back. So you're going to take it all up front in beef.
This is the protest option. Just dozens of people smashing 25 pies in the first game back, and then they're throwing the sort of pie paraphernalia onto the pitch, like we've seen certain. Was it Charlton? Where, what did they chuck on the pitch? Tennis balls.
Tennis balls. With little
empty pie cartons. I don't advocate that, by the way.
I do not advocate the use of pie cartons. We've drifted away from the season ticket business, but there's kind of been a lot of conversation around this. It's taken a long time to get it done, but there has been a kind of sense of feeling around it that it's not a secret what the club would like you to do with this money. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. And I think there was a lot of conversation behind the scenes about the tone of that. Some clubs have come out and just made it clear that it's, you know, we need the money. Please leave it with us. Southend and other clubs. And I think there was a conversation behind the scenes at Ipswich that that's not necessarily a great look for a club like Ipswich that's run by a multi-millionaire. And I think that's right. But I still think they've, as much as they've tried to not overtly do it, it's pretty clear what they want you to do between the Marcus Evans letter, the Lee O'Neill interview. They want the money. There's a difference there between want and need, isn't there? It's not a case of if we don't get this money, the club is in danger, immediate financial danger. They want it, from what Lee O'Neill said. Like, it's the difference between how much we can strengthen in the transfer market this summer. If you leave your money with us, we'll be able to sign players, is essentially reading between the lines of what they're saying. So as a fan, I'd be thinking, I don't think anyone should have any guilt at all, whether they need the money back or whether they just want their money back for their own lifestyle or whatever. I don't think you should justify whether you want that money back. You know, sorry. If it means that you can't sign any players this summer, then how about actually just coaching the players that you've got and using the players that you've got, you know, give a chance to some of the younger ones and see what happens. I don't know. What do you reckon?
I think it kind of all adding up together as maybe, I don't know, it maybe creates kind of a little bit of an atmosphere around it. There are lots of kind of, in isolation, the club kind of tweeting fans who have said they were taking the Option A charitable donation to say thank you. That's a nice thing to do, to say thank you, but people can construe that to be amounting to something of a guilt trip. I don't think that's how it was intended, no. But it's kind of a cumulative effect of all of these things together kind of do make it possible to kind of see that as a bit of a guilt trip. And there are a few people that pointed out that we've maybe played something of a small part in that as well. We ran a story towards the end of last week relating to a potential £10 million black hole in the club's finance, which, kind of looking at it, that has kind of come before all of the season ticket stuff launched, didn't it? But it's maybe worth explaining the background to that story and how it came about, in that those are figures we've been asking the club for quite some time, and they were sent to us at that time. So we ran that story as part of all of that.
Yeah, and I can see the accusations of collusion have come from a couple of places, like, oh, this is handy timing that, you know, on the Saturday, we hear about the £10 million back hole, and then by the middle of the next, then you get the Matt Holland interview on the club website, which, you know, talking about how great Marcus is, then you get by the middle of the week, the season ticket stuff. So, and then, you know, Marcus referring to the figures in the local media within that piece, I can see how people would look at that from the outside in. But as you say, the cynic in me thinks that the club certainly gave us those figures, which we had been asking for some time at an appropriate moment. Of course they have. You know, they've thought that through, no doubt about it. Should people go, well, should you have run the figures? Well, they're of interest to people, and we'd been asking for them beforehand. So once we got them, we run them. So they are worst case scenario figures. That is, if the whole season next year was played behind closed doors, which isn't going to happen. It's looking highly unlikely. They're talking about a restart. It's looking more and more likely that the restart will be 12th of September. And then I think it won't be too much longer before they can start welcoming some fans back into the stadium, be that 20%, 30% of capacity, and Ipswich will be okay. From what I'm told, Evans, at the very, very early on in this process, says we'll be okay for 6 months. If we can get to, we can get through to September, and if things are kind of back and up and running by September, we'll be all right. But if it goes much beyond September, that's when it's going to become a problem.
Interesting. Yeah, it does seem like it's edging. Well, there's talk today about test events being run for sporting events with crowds in the next few weeks and months. I think there are pre-season games being played in the Netherlands coming up, maybe towards the end of this month, that they're going to start having fans back. The French Cup final is going to be played with, I think, maybe 5,000 supporters from each team attending, in obviously a 60,000 seater stadium. And then there's also other kind of test events in the UK being talked about as well. So it is seemingly edging towards the potential of crowds by September, which will be strange, because it's not going to feel like Portman Road on a match day. Still, I wouldn't have thought. It's going to be very different, but it's getting there, isn't it? And that'll be great.
Yes. Yeah, I guess, they've got 9,000 roughly season ticket holders are renewed for next year. So with a 30,000 capacity stadium, if they're talking about a sort of a third, 30% capacity of that, then I pretty much imagine that it will be season ticket holders only. And that will be that. They'll space them out. That's the kind of scenario that I'll see early on. But I guess as things progress, a month is a long time during this crisis. Things, touch wood, God forbid, could get worse with second peaks and localised lockdowns and things. But if things get better a month at a time, then hopefully there's capacity quite quickly to add 10% on top, and we'll slowly creep back up to higher capacity.
Yeah.
To be honest, it's not like Portman Road's been packed full week after week in recent years either, is it? So
No. And obviously, if we're talking about the start of a new season, that means some football players need to start playing football again in pre-season friendlies, that kind of thing. And I'm led to believe that Paul Lambert and his coaches are really keen to have the players back in the next couple of weeks, out on the training pitch, going through a full pre-season ahead of a September start. They're not back yet. They haven't trained together since March. But I think that there's talks going on about getting permission to return towards the end of July, which while we don't have a definite start date for next season, it is all heading in that right direction, it sounds like, which is great, because 6 weeks ago, this seemed a long way off, didn't it? Mm. Even a month ago, to be talking about a return to training.
Yeah, I think they want 6 weeks with the players. That's what the fitness guys and the sports scientists and everything talk about, having 6 weeks to properly condition the players. So I guess they're probably now in their official holiday period, which footballers are entitled to. Six weeks is what they'll look for. And I'm sure they'll be, well, I know they're in sort of tentative talks with other teams in the area about some behind closed doors friendlies, which I imagine will sort of take place at training grounds and things like that. So at the moment, it seems like everyone's trying to get a few plans in place for this mid-September start.
Sounds good. Away from that, there's been some contract news this week and some transfer news this week of sorts. So which of those do you want to tackle first, Stu? Which should we go into?
Contracts.
Let's go contracts. So the contract news this week are fairly simple. 12-month contract extensions options taken on Thomas Holy and John Nolan, both of whom were going into their final year of their initial Ipswich contracts, but will now both be contracted through this season and the one after that. So, but it's a little different here in that we know all about contract options. They get taken generally late in the season, when the club aren't completely convinced by a player but want to give them another year, or if a negotiation hasn't quite reached a conclusion and then another year is taken. But these were taken very early. Both already had 12 months left. They now have 24 months left. So what's the reasoning behind these new deals for Thomas Holy and John Nolan for their extensions?
I can't remember these one-year options ever being taken this far in advance. So if anyone tells you the club have just done it to give an extra year, then that's wrong. You know, there is an ulterior motive here, and our understanding from speaking to people within the game is that it's the salary cap, the potential for a salary cap, which the talks now seem to be at a more advanced stage, and they're going to have, I think, more a vote on it, are they, or more of an in-depth chat on it in the coming days about a salary cap. But there seems to be a desire out there from the lower league clubs to bring a salary cap in, because, you know, unless you are an Ipswich or a Sunderland or one of the inverted commas bigger clubs in League One, it's going to be in your interest to put a cap on things, because it will provide a level playing field for others, and it's going to enable people to get their wage bill down in really difficult financial times. So they won't be able to just bring that in overnight, you would imagine. There will have to be some mitigation for clubs like Ipswich that are going to have to come down a hell of a lot if the figures of about £2.5 million a year for League One are to be believed. That will still be a hell of a jump for Ipswich. I mean, they were on 18 to 19 million a year in the Championship. A massive, massive cut when they came down because of the clauses in the contracts. They were sort of cutting those by 50% plus in many cases. So I don't know, a guesstimate is the wage bill is probably somewhere around £5 to £6 million now. So you're going to be looking at cutting that at least in half again if these salary caps come in. So I don't imagine that they'll be able to include anyone who has signed a contract before the rules come in, hence why they've taken these options now, because they won't count.
Yeah, and we're not entirely sure when this cap would be introduced, but say it's introduced this summer, that would effectively give Ipswich two free, in inverted commas, years of Thomas Holy and John Nolan, wouldn't it, in terms of their cap number. You'd imagine wouldn't count in the first season or the second, which when you then think about players under the age of 21 not counting as well, and the fact that there are a significant number of other players who have contract options which could be taken, it should, while kind of shrinking Ipswich's window to get out of League One, give them 2 years of advantage potentially over some other clubs in there, because there are a lot of other contract options that could be taken as well. Caden Jackson's one, Danasian one, which you might debate whether or not that would be taken or not, but there are plenty of other ones in there, and then plenty of other contracts that actually expire next summer with no option on them. So it's interesting times, but I could see a few more of these options being taken over the next few weeks before that actually comes in.
Yes, and I'm sure, well, we know that they're in talks with some other players, and that the option is probably the scenario that they take only once talks about sort of a longer deal hit a brick wall, really. So yeah, interesting times. What, we're down to 28 players still when they're going into their final year as it stands,
something like that. Danasian, Chambers, Hughes, Judge, Wilson, Sears, Jackson, Bishop, Enciala, Nida, Melmazuni, Wright, Skews, Dazelle, Edwards, McGavin, Trine and Shibek, Falami, Morris, Cotter, Clements, Gibbs, Ando, Brown, Hughes. It's a long old list. There's actually only one, what was it, about 12 players who were contracted beyond the end of next season. So potential for a shake-up, depending on what happens, but that's a long way. That's a long way down the line. That's contracts. Next up, transfers. A fair few rumours doing the rounds, some little stories here and there. Any preference where we start with these? Is all centred around around strikers?
Well, let's start with what we do know before we get onto the world of rumour. Our understanding is that Paul Lambert has made signing a striker one of his sort of top priorities this summer. I think they've had their chats, him and Marcus have had their chats about budget, and I think he's been told that he can get a striker. I think what level of striker it will be depend on how many people ask for the refunds and when the season restarts and how quickly fans get in. But I think they're looking at getting a senior striker to compete. And I know that will split people, say, is that really a top priority in terms of the squad? I'm not sure. You could argue that they need a different type of striker to Norwood, to Jackson, to Sears, someone a bit more physical, someone who can hold it up and others can play off of. I don't know. But then we move on to the kind of the raft of strikers that have been linked. And this is a frustrating time of year for us, isn't it? Kind of sifting through a lot of the stuff that comes out.
Yeah, and that is what it is as well. It's a wheat from the chaff exercise. Further to that, I gather that the search for a striker is kind of all consuming, in that any other moves are potentially very much got the handbrake on until they get a striker done, such as the desire to get one. But like you say, there's plenty of debate over whether that search is needed quite so much. But whatever striker it is, it needs to be someone with a bit more of a physical presence, doesn't it? Like you said, that someone with a bit of power, hold up play potentially, that could maybe play with one of the players that's already there.
Well, let's work on the assumption that Lambert wants to play 4-3-3, which I think was always his formation of choice from day one. I think it was circumstances which led to, I think they started 4-4-2 last year purely based on Jackson's pre-season form, and Jackson can't play as a one, we know that. So I think that was 4-4-2, and then I think they ended up with wing-backs because of the lack of wide options. Once Sears was out, Lancaster was out, then Rowe picks up an injury, and I think they just realised that they didn't really have the wide options. And you looked at Garbutt and Vincent Young, they had the attributes for wing-back. So that's... I think... Now all of that's settled down, I think they'll look to 4-3-3. How many strikers do you need for 4-3-3? If you're talking about the striker being just that one, do you really need four senior strikers? Can you get by with three and then a Fellaini or a Morris from below if they're really needed?
I think you're right, but I would... But if you're playing a 4-3-3, how many of the strikers that are there at the moment are capable of being the one? And I would argue actually only one.
Yeah.
Only James Norwood.
Yeah, I agree.
Playing that role.
That's probably the thinking. And there was too much pressure on Norwood's shoulders last year, and people kept forgetting that it was his first year at League One level and the injuries didn't help. So that is probably what they're thinking. Somebody that can relieve some of that pressure on Norwood's shoulders. But a physical target man option would be the pragmatic move. If it's a case of, look, we need different ways to win games in different scenarios, then yes, I think they've lacked one of those. But if Lambert is really wanting to focus on one way of playing, and I think they've tried to be too many different things. They've kind of flitted between trying to play football out from the goalkeeper on the floor, then they abandoned that for a little while and went a bit more direct. I think they need to just pick a style now and work on it, and a formation, and have an identity now. And if that identity is play out from the back and be this sort of fluid 4-3-3 with the two wingers coming inside and creating room for the fullbacks to bomb on, then do you need a target man? Because Norwood thrived in a 4-3-3 at Tranmere with those sort of in that same sort of system. So I think that's what they were trying to replicate. And I don't know, I can see those sort of support three being quite fluid. At Lancaster, a Bishop or a
Judge
or a El Mizuni or a Dobra or, you know, all those sort of players playing as a very sort of fluid support three that can swap flanks, drift inside, join the attack when they want. Do you need like a pivot striker up there to for those to play off of? I can see the argument for it.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the most target man-y of the names that we've been discussing this week. And Charlie Wyke of Sunderland is a name that we were made aware of last weekend. It then came out elsewhere a few days later. But there's a reason we didn't kind of go with that story ourselves. And I think that's because we didn't think that there was an awful lot in it. And I still don't on that one. What did you think of that one? Because he is a target man, isn't he? In the most traditional sense.
Yeah. I think people get too caught up in sometimes stats when they look at players. So he's only scored 11 goals in 60 games or whatever it was. If you're buying a target man, it's not always, you don't want to be too blinded by goals. You know, when I've seen him play, I thought I think he can be a handful. I think, you know, you're signing that player for hold up play, for link up play, for the space they create for others, so don't get too caught up in goal stats. You know, you can go back to Daryl Murphy, didn't have a great goal record when Ipswich signed him, and sometimes you can find that in players. But you're right, it's, to go back to kind of the inner workings of how the transfer rumours work, I mean, you were the one that got a call about him last weekend. We didn't think through other research that there was loads in it, but sometimes your hand gets forced because that same source of information will go elsewhere. It comes out as a story. It then forces us to not ignore it because, you know, we've kind of got to reflect that there is some information out there at times, but that's why we always badge it up as a rumour.
Yeah. Yeah. A slightly different one that we didn't badge up as a rumour was Johnson Clark-Harris yesterday. Of Bristol Rovers. Ipswich didn't actually come up against him last season. I think he was injured for the game down at Portman Road. But he's got a good goal record, and that is one that I'm led to believe there is some interest there. It's not hugely advanced. It's more a case of an admiring glance at a player who's into the final year of a contract. Has enjoyed 18 really good months in League One. He's left-footed, he's quick, powerful, can score with both feet and from long range as well. So he fits the bill to me, and I do believe there's some interest there, but the obvious obstacle is the fact that it would require a six-figure transfer fee of at least £500,000, possibly more. So that's the obvious hurdle that needs to be overcome there if that's an interest they want to take any further.
This is where Ipswich will see opportunity this summer, that other clubs are going to be in more perilous financial position and may be forced to sell players that they otherwise wouldn't have done this summer, and he might fall into that category. I think in hindsight, they'll regret probably not getting maximum value for him in January. He's now heading into the final year of his contract. Is that the sort of player that you can prize away from a divisional rival that ordinarily you wouldn't? There's one phrase you used in there which jumps off the page to me in terms of attributes, and that was left-footed.
Yeah.
And I think if you go through some of these targets that have been mentioned, there's a lot of left-footed players in amongst there. And Lambert's spoken a lot about left-footed balance. He's talked about it at centre-back, not having enough left-footed options there. And I think throughout the squad, there's not many left-footers in there. You've got Lancaster, you've got Kenlock and Nydam, who, as it stands, are the two left-back options. Hughes, not many at all. Certainly not many in the final third as well. So I think that will be one key attribute they're definitely looking for is left-footed players.
I think it wouldn't shock me if Clark Harris could also play one of the wide forward roles. He's got all of the attributes to do that. We've said a few times that we'd have quite liked Caden Jackson to have a little go at that, just so we can see what he could do. But I think Clark Harris would be more natural in that role. He's a better dribbler than Caden. Caden's a runner. Clark Harris is a dribbler, so he could fulfill, tick a couple of boxes there. He very much play as a forward, which would excite me.
A left-sided forward, a left winger, is what they need more than a. That would be higher in my priority list than a striker, than a target man, to be quite honest. Because what are your left-sided options at the moment? Sears or Edwards, who it staggers me that they've not used him on the left yet, considering that's where he's played his best football for Peterborough. That's what they signed him as, and Lambert has used him anywhere but so far. We've seen him right back, right wing back. I'm not convinced that they'll use Edwards as a left-sided option. Sears, I can see being the kind of starter at the moment for that role. I know it wasn't everyone's cup of tea when he was kind of chugging up and down the left under Mick McCarthy's management and not scoring goals. But I thought in those early stages of Lambert's management, he was got a lease of new life playing in that role, because he was playing it differently to under Mick. It was almost like the shackles were off and he was being encouraged to cut inside, have efforts on goal, and he was looking all right and until that injury came along at Norwich and wiped him out for so long. So hopefully Freddie can kind of pick up where he left off, although that's a big ask after so long out. But I would be targeting a left winger than a left sided than a striker. Maybe Clark Harris is kind of a two in one option that covers both bases.
Yeah, without going into Freddie Sears in too great a depth, I can't see him getting much football away from one of those wing roles now. I'm not sure how much I can see him playing as a central striker at Ipswich anymore. Not that we've seen him there particularly much for the last, three or four years anyway, but I just think that's his route into the team now, is in a front three in one of the wide roles. And I really hope we get to see more of him, because like you say, that October and November, well, largely November under Paul Lambert in 2018 was really good. But that is a fair old time ago now. So hopefully we get to see the best of Freddie again. One other little thing to note perhaps from the talk of Clark Harris was that it's a report that also was covered in from the Bristol side of things at the Bristol Post there. And there was what seemed like a throwaway line in that story, sort of linking any interest in Clark Harris from Ipswich to a potential departure for James Norwood. That's not something we are aware of being something that's imminent and is necessarily going to happen. But we do kind of think we know where that report might have come from, where that information might have come from. But it's an interesting one. James Norwood, is he a big part of the plan going forward?
You would imagine so. Ipswich went all out to get him last summer. You know, they've put him on big League One wages. They beat Peterborough. There's plenty of clubs in for him. We talked Joey Barton, who we know knows James. They've been spotted out on nights out and pictures together. Was keen to get him last summer for Fleetwood, but kind of bemoaned the fact that Ipswich blew them out the water in terms of wages. There would have been other clubs as well looking to get him with his goal record in League Two. So I can't imagine 1 year on what has changed for him not to be part of that. Personality-wise, he's a big character. They would have known that when they brought him in. I think that was actually part of the reasoning to get him in, to actually inject a bit of personality and character into the squad last summer. I think at times, maybe that's he's probably pushed his luck with some of the coaching staff behind the scenes. But I think you have to. There's an acceptance of what you get with James Norwood, with his social media and the laughs and the pranks and everything. We haven't seen. I don't think it's fair to judge James Norwood on his first season at Ipswich so far. You know, he says he was playing on one leg for most of the time. And that's probably why they're looking at another striker to kind of relieve some of that pressure on him. They overplayed him during a time where the injuries were there, and you just hope he's one that's benefited from a prolonged break and can come back, and we can see the true James Norwood.
I know we talked about this last summer when Ellis Harrison was allowed to move on, didn't we, about the potential of Harrison being one that could come back and bite Ipswich. Say, for example, and I'm not suggesting that this is going to happen. Say Norwood is allowed to move on. I really hope that doesn't happen, because I can see him having a really, really strong season next season. But in the event that he's allowed to move on, given what we know about the fact he's on big league one money, the clubs that are going to sign him, they're going, anyone that could be in a position to take him would have to be a top end league one club. And I can really see any departure for James Norwood coming back to bite Ipswich next season. Can you? I can just picture it now.
Yeah, I thought Harrison had done enough in that relegation season too. I wanted to see him given a year in League One. So, there would be that potential with Norwood, no doubt about it. But I don't know if Ipswich have decided that, you know, they want to go down a different route. Perhaps they have. I can't see it though. I can't see it.
No, I can't either. But there's a long old lot of summer still to come, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if something came out from somewhere.
The only thing is that, you know, the wages is at the higher end, and if they've, you know, if things have changed because of salary cap and COVID and everything like that, and they decide that money is better spent elsewhere in the wage bill, that is the only factor that I can think that comes into it. But
I can't see which club would take those wages on. This is a life-changing contract for James. And I'd imagine he'd be keen to remain on that contract rather than taking any kind of cut to go somewhere else. So yeah, I can't see it, but I can envisage this topic being revisited again over the next few weeks, certainly. That is the end of our list, Stu. We put together a little list before this, and we've taken an hour to discuss it. We've reached the end of our list, which means, should we have a little dip into the mailbag? Most of the questions in there were related to season tickets and other things, so we have covered most of those. But thank you all ever so much for your questions that have come in. But should we take a few of the off-topic ones, just two or three before we go, Stu?
Yes, go for it.
Yeah. Right. Let me find the one. Jack Slader, our cooking friend, simply says, Lee Johnson, do you think he'd come back down to League One level? And if so, would you have him at Ipswich? Just left Bristol City earlier this week.
I think any manager that's been in the Championship and is always going to be looking for another job at that level straight away, especially for a club at Bristol City where, you know, we're starting to have serious ambitions at that level. But as we've seen with managers, their targets can lower over time. The longer you are out of the game, the more he might consider dropping down a level to a ambitious club, which Ipswich would have some persuading to do to someone like that. Links to Suffolk with, you know, his dad, Newmarket, Gary. It's not impossible. It's probably the type of manager that would straddle the enough experience to persuade Marcus that it's not a massive gamble, but still kind of seen in that sort of younger, new breed mould as well. You never know. The stars have to align for stuff like that, but it's not impossible.
This is a question that's been asked by a few people, including George and Brad. It's referencing Peterborough and their move, which is they brought 10 or so of their younger players, kind of top end 23s and lower end first team players, have come back to training early to get some time with Darren Ferguson there that they wouldn't normally get, just to give them some contact time and help their progression. Do you think this is something Ipswich should consider, is the question?
They're doing everything they can in terms of training, and obviously there's loads of health and safety protocols at the moment about what you're allowed to do. Obviously testing people as well. The tests aren't cheap. I know McAntony at Peterborough has been talking about, you know, they need to get the prices of those down or get some financial help with those. £125 a head. So if you're starting to do those twice a week for people, that becomes a hefty old bill. But Ipswich have been doing a lot of one-on-one training with the guys that are rehabbing back from injuries, Vincent Young, Lancaster, people like that, throughout this whole period. And I think they are, I understand they're doing a few sort of small sessions with small groups at the moment that are very socially distanced and within guidelines, just to kind of keep people's eye in. So they're doing what they can, and they're ready to go. They're itching to go as soon as they're given the green light a little bit more from the authorities.
Just to tick a little box here, it was reported, I think it was on our friends at TWTD this week, about some younger players, about some players, I should say, being on the government's furlough scheme. Leo Neal saying there. But we've got to stress there that the understanding is that isn't, we're not talking about frontline first team players here. That, for example, Luke Chambers isn't on furlough. The first team squad largely aren't on furlough. Is that right, Stu? We're talking more about potentially some of the younger guys?
Yeah, we don't have a full list of who is and isn't, but our understanding was that it's primarily the younger kids, the academy guys that are on furlough, which stands to reason when you think about the amount, you know, the furlough scheme obviously only covers up to what's the equivalent of 30,000 a year, isn't it? Is it $2,500 a month?
Yeah.
That it's capped at. So, you know, when you start talking about senior players, that's going to scratch the surface for what some of them are earning, obviously. So I know people have gone, why haven't they furloughed the players? I think, A, it's not a great look if you're, I don't think for any professional football club of Ipswich's size to be asking the government, by extension, the taxpayer, to pick up footballers' wages at the moment. You couldn't expect... this is going to sound wrong. You couldn't expect a footballer to be cut from whatever they're on per year down to 30 grand a year. And people will go, oh, my heart bleeds. You know, how are they going to cope? You budget your lifestyle accordingly. You know, that would be a huge pay cut, you know. And it would probably be breach of contract as well, I imagine, if you start putting those senior players on furlough and not topping them, even if you were topping them up. I think there'd be contract implications, wouldn't there?
Absolutely. As an example, that there are players within the Ipswich squad that to go down to the furlough level would essentially be a 90% pay cut, which is breach of contract. And if you are, some of those players would have a transfer value as well, which if you're in breach of contract and players are able to get out of their contracts, you've lost that value. So it's a tricky one, and I can understand why people are looking at it and thinking, why have the club not done that? But I can see why they haven't. I can see why they haven't in those cases, because it's just not doesn't make sense for them in many ways. And like you say, it's not a great look, is it, asking the government to pay wages of professional footballers who, while not among the superstar stratosphere in terms of salary, are earning incredibly good livings. So yeah, it's not the greatest look in the world, is it? Should we just take two more questions just before we get done? We'll move away from football. For Harvey Davis, our Welsh friend of the show, boyo, wants to know, Stuart Watson, where the first, your, if you have any plans to return to restaurants and what restaurant that would be for a proper slap-up meal.
I've got no desire at the moment to rush out and go to a restaurant or a pub at this moment in time. You?
What, even on a Monday to Wednesday with your eat out to help out?
Well, yeah.
Offer.
Mean, this is August, isn't it? That combined with a sort of a further month down the line and some discount might persuade me. This is probably a question to wait for our esteemed host to come back and discuss food.
Yeah,
what
it's
about,
gonna.
What about you?
No, I've not been to a pub, and I've not really got any plans to rush out for a dinner, despite Rishi's kind offer of a tenner off Fernando's. I may not even use that during August. Who knows? But yeah, Mark's probably the man for that one, isn't it? I'm sure he's got a very long list of potential destinations. He's away next week as well, so it's just going to be you and I rambling on this next week. He's off for his annual pilgrimage to the Peak District, which is his happy place, and no doubt will involve some country pub stops and some eating out as well. So maybe we'll ask Mark for a report on his eating habits when he returns. Let's leave it there, Stu. I think we've done enough. We've been rambling on for an hour and 10 minutes, which is far too long for people to listen to our voices. You got anything else you need to discuss before we
depart? Other business. No other business.
I also have no other business. We have just received an email, you and I, Stu, from the shadowy Argent figure who wants to know why we haven't got in contact to let them know what's going in tomorrow's newspaper.
Okay.
There's a peek behind the curtain.
There's a double exclamation mark there saying, why haven't we sent forward any plans, which anything more than one question mark is bordering on sort of passive aggressive, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah. It's to peek behind the curtain. It's 10 past 12. That email is usually sent by 9:30. So we should probably reply to that. So on that note, I'm going to say goodbye. Farewell. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe. Please leave a review, preferably 5 stars. And please come back next week to listen to us talk about more football. You got anything else to add, Stu?
No, we've established that.
Goodbye.
Crime to football, Brexit to hopeful. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.